Good afternoon, everyone. The Healthcare Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Emma, please call the roll.
Chair Garrison.
Here.
Vice Chair Jacques.
Here.
Councilmember Woodson, excuse. Representatives Abbott.
Here.
Amnesty.
Here.
Antone. Bartleman.
Here.
Black.
Here.
Campbell, excuse. Kennedy, excuse. Mello.
Here.
Salzman.
Here.
Skidmore.
Here.
Steele, excuse. Trabolsi. Quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Emma. I'm sure our lean numbers today have nothing to do with this being Thursday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Good to have everyone here. We're glad you're here. Thank you all for being here. And I want to welcome everyone to the Healthcare Appropriations Subcommittee. Members, today the Agency for Healthcare Administration is going to be providing an update to our committee on two topics that have been a subject of good discussion in this committee both last year and now carrying into this year. And that is the Florida Nursing Home Uniform Financial Reporting System and Florida's Healthcare Transparency Initiatives. Kim Smoke, the Deputy Secretary for Healthcare Policy and Oversight, will be presenting on behalf of the agency, as well as Dr. Chris Kogel, the Chief Medical Officer. Dr. Kogel here. I saw him back there. Dr. Kogel with the Chief Medical Officer for the agency as well. This is a bit of a precursor before we get started today. These initiatives that we're going to be discussing, a lot of work went into them by our predecessor legislators. I know now Senator Trumbull, when he was Appropriations Chair, was over in the House, did a lot of work on the Nursing Home Uniform Financial Reporting System, and then a number of folks who have all termed out, most of them, were involved with the Healthcare Transparency Initiatives. I think it's very important for us as appropriators when we look at our budget and we talk about spending money on some of these initiatives that we periodically circle back and make sure that we do our part to see how the projects are working, whether or not they're meeting the goals that we set for them when we were initially wrote the law, back in the day. The goal is not to play gotcha or anything like that. It's just to make sure we're doing the best we can to ensure the highest return on the investment for the taxpayer. And ultimately, with both of these initiatives, to make sure that consumers and policymakers are given the most reliable data by which to make decisions that are in the best interests of the Floridians that we serve. So I want to thank, before we even get started, I want to thank the Agency for Healthcare Administration, Secretary Weeda and his team for their work with me in preparation for this meeting. I really am grateful for that. They've been very, very excellent partners in this initiative, and I thank them for that. I encourage members as we go through this that we have a robust discussion. I trust, I know some of you have done your homework, the assignment I gave you last week. I think this is a great initiative. What we did here, leading the way in data transparency, particularly as a state, is something we should be proud of. We're going to continue to try to make it better. So with that, Deputy Secretary Smoke, you are recognized.
Good afternoon, Chair Garrison, Vice Chair Jock, and other committee members. I'm Kim Smoke. I am the Deputy Secretary for the Division of Healthcare Policy and Oversight. Thank you for inviting me here today to provide the agency's update on our transparency websites and also our implementation of the Nursing Home Uniform Reporting System, our FNURS. You will hear me throughout the presentation speak about FNURS. I will just say FNURS instead of the whole name. So if I say FNURS, you will understand what I'm speaking about. I am also glad to be joined today by our agency's Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Chris Kogel. Dr. Kogel will provide a clinical perspective on the use of our agency's transparency websites at the conclusion of the overview that I'll be providing for you today. So let's get started. FNURS. First, I'm going to provide you with the status of our FNERS system. You're probably already very familiar with this requirement, but I'll share some background as we get started on the law and update you on where we are as far as implementation. So our authority as the agency, as it's noted on this slide here, section 408.061 provides us at the agency with the authority to collect financial data from nursing homes. This includes collecting of actual financial experiences for the specific fiscal year, which includes expenditures, revenues, and statistical measures. This would also include the nursing home's audited actual experience, which must include the fiscal year-end balance sheet, income statement, and statement of cash flow, and statement of retained earnings, and must be submitted to the agency via FNERS. I mentioned earlier the terminology statistical measures, which would include resident days and FTEs. For example, we would use this information in order to determine the average length of stay. In February of this year, some of you may remember, I provided an update on the status of FNERS, where we were still in the rulemaking process. However, now 59E4 became effective November the 1st, so earlier this month, and authorizes the online submission form and required attachments for the financial reporting system called FNERS. Per the rule that I just mentioned, we also have developed a manual which outlines requirements for using the online system. The rule, 59E4, also does mirror the requirements that have been in place for financial reporting for hospitals for many years. So what is required? The nursing home has to file this financial data and audit that data that reconciles to. The nursing home will now have to pay for audits, which have to be done annually. And the only financial data prior to this was the Medicaid cost reports, which were audited after the fact for rate setting purposes. As noted on this slide, in addition to the nursing home, the home office will also be required to report separately. So when we speak of home office, that means services provided to an affiliated nursing home, such as administrative services, and these would be charges to the individual nursing home. Think of the home office as being the parent company that bills for services provided to its affiliates. The development, so FNERS development. As you may know, the agency did not receive funding for the creation of FNERS. So to really get this project started and off the ground quickly and with the least amount of cost possible, we did leverage existing systems and accounting codes instead of starting from scratch. The first thing that the agency had to do was come up with what specific data needed to be collected. Rather than create a whole new chart of financial accounts, we did leverage the chart accounts already in place for Medicaid cost reporting. This allowed for consistency in accounting definitions for Medicaid cost report requirements and FNERS. Next, we had to build a system to collect the data. The hospital reporting system was not a viable alternative for us to use due to cost and the number of changes that we would have had to make to the system. So we were still able to piggyback on the development of the Medicaid cost reporting system that was already underway. This did cut down on the development time and the added benefit of centralizing the financial reporting requirements for nursing homes, such as the cost reports and FNERS. Even though the cost reports and FNERS are two separate reporting requirements, they do share a similar look and feel and functionality. Rule drafting was started. Once the basic scope and design of the system was decided on, we held an early workshop to get feedback on the forms from the nursing home associations and CPA firms that prepare cost reports for nursing homes. The idea there was for us to get an early feedback to reduce the rework by our development team. We then leveraged the final rule workshop to incorporate external users to test the system. The system is currently live, and the agency will continue outreach as the common fiscal year reportings ends do approach us, which is June 30th, September 30th, and 12/31. The first nursing home financial data we would expect to receive would be for the fiscal year ending 12/31. However, the agency will not have viable financial data on nursing homes to report until 120 days after the nursing home's fiscal year end per the statute. To give you a little bit of information on FNERS as it relates to Medicaid cost reports, the agency, as you know, already collects a significant amount of financial data about nursing homes through our Medicaid cost reports. While there is some significant duplication of data collection between FNERS and the cost reports, there are some very key differences. As I previously mentioned, FNERS submissions are required to reconcile to the audited financial statements. FNERS is not audited, but the financial data in the FNERS must be tied to the audit. So for example, on the balance sheet, cash in the audit must match cash reported in FNERS. In addition, cost reports, as the name implies, focuses on allowable cost, whereas FNERS focuses equally on cost, revenue, assets, and liabilities. While the focus of FNERS is broader than the cost report, it is less detailed than the cost report and is much better suited for that broad financial ratio analysis. For example, profitability and cash flow ratios. By contrast, the cost reporting is best used for rate setting. Finally, every nursing home has to file a FNERS report annually. Only nursing homes that are Medicaid providers have to file an annual cost report. Just to let you know, we roughly have 4% of our nursing homes are non-Medicaid certified. Questions about FNERS. Earlier in the presentation, I mentioned to you providing this committee actually with an overview of FNERS in February this year. During that February presentation, there were questions raised regarding the system and the requirements from a lot of you in the room today. And in an effort to address those questions, we've incorporated responses into the slide. So I'll go over some of the key questions and responses with you. On profitability and related parties, profitability and what services are provided by home office will be included in the FNERS filing. Whether intercompany and related party costs are appropriate and reasonable is a function of the cost reporting process, not FNERS data collection. Which means this would be required for the Medicaid cost reporting. Regarding bed availability, I know that that has come up before, bed availability and capturing that. Real-time bed availability is not in the scope for FNERS. The data collected in FNERS will include resident days and occupancy, but the rest of the data in FNERS filing, but the data is historical data. So that's why we are not able to capture real-time bed availability. One of the other questions was raised was the $15 an hour question. We do specifically ask that question in FNERS. In addition, we also collect salary and total hours so we can calculate average hourly rate by key positions. And by key positions, we mean administrator, director of nursing, certified nursing assistant, registered nurse, and licensed practical nurse, whether it's direct or contracted staff. The system is currently live, and per statute, as I mentioned, 408.061, filings are due 120 days after the fiscal year end, with an additional, per our rule, with an additional 30-day extension available. But that's only if requested and only if approved would we grant a 30-day extension. We do expect, unfortunately, delays in reporting in the first year due to this being a new reporting system. With that, so thanks for allowing me the opportunity to provide an update on FNERS.
Any questions about the nursing home database before we go on to the transparency website? Representative Barlman, yes, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, there recently was a new federal rule regarding nursing homes. So how is that going to interface with that data that's now being required by the feds?
You recognize.
Thank you, Chair. Well, that was just released. You're talking about the transparency.
Yeah.
That rule was just released yesterday. So we have not had a time to do a deep dive into that rule and do a comparison. But we can and we'll do that, Representative Bartleman, and get back to you.
You're welcome. Recognize for follow-up.
Thank you. And in terms of a follow-up, do you anticipate that if they have stuff that we don't, you would just add it just so we can enhance our website even more or no?
Recognize.
We can definitely look into that and take that under advisement. We'll need to look at our statutory rule writing authority and then what we already have in the rule and go from there.
Thank you.
As you know, that was specifically about transparency too. So we will definitely do a comparison. Thank you.
Representative Anton, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your presentation. Quick question, who's the target audience for this database and what's the value of the data to the target audience?
Sure.
Recognize.
Oh, sorry, thank you. So the target audience, I guess would be us as overseers, you as legislators, to see, you know, the actual cost of running a nursing home. So that would really be kind of the target audience. And I'm sorry, I don't remember your last part of your question.
Rep. Anton.
Sorry.
Oh, no problem. And thank you. Just trying to figure out what's the value of all this data collected. How does it help somebody?
So, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
right. Okay, thanks. So the value in the data, again, is really to, from a transparency standpoint, is to really see how much does cost to run our nursing homes, how much is allocated from a Medicaid standpoint as well, for us to be able to capture that data and how much, you know, from a salary standpoint and then just operational. You know, and as I mentioned, this does capture the home office as well. So it's two separate reporting requirements.
Any other questions? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Is this information available to the public, or is it only through a public records request that it would be available to the public?
You're recognized.
It would be through a public record request. The intent right now is not to post it publicly, but we can take that under advisement.
Any other questions? I did have one question. I want to make sure I understand it. One of the questions that was brought up by our members at our previous hearing was on, I think the language was contracting with themselves or dual ownership, however you want to do that. Could you flesh that out a little bit in terms of, the question was, will the agency be tracking nursing homes contracting with themselves? I see the answer, but just in layman's terms, what information, if any, is going to be garnered in that respect, specifically related to common ownership of?
Well, if you don't mind, I would appreciate the opportunity to get with my
sure.
staff, who is really the brains behind the FNIRS system,
okay.
and make sure that we fully understand your question and be able to get back to you
sure.
if you're okay
no
with
problem.
That.
So bottom line is, we will be up live when?
We're up live now. So the system's live now.
Okay.
And you know, as I mentioned.
Yeah, let me rephrase it. When will we have the data, when will policymakers have the data in a format which we can review it and make decisions based on that data?
Based on the way the statute was written and in the rule,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's based on the nursing home's fiscal year.
Mm-hmm.
So the first available reporting would be 12/31,
okay.
and then it would be available 120 days after that 12/31 date. Again, that's outlined in statute.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Any other questions on this? Any other questions? Representative Bartleman, yes, you recognize.
Thank you, Chair. So would we be, so if we, I guess, did you make the rule or did we make the rule with the dates? Or is it because we're always going to be a year behind then when we're making decisions?
You recognize?
Yeah. Well, the time frame in 408.061 outlines the 120-day time frame after the fiscal year end date of the nursing home.
Recognize.
Is that a rule made by the agency or a rule outlined in legislation?
You recognize.
It's in statute. 48.061, it's in statute.
Okay, I thought it was a rule number, sorry.
Yeah. Well, we created a rule based on statutory authority for the form and the collection, but the actual time frame, 120 days after fiscal year end, is in statute.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Well, I'm, for one, very hopeful and look forward to, even though it won't be in time for this legislative session, going forward to have an opportunity to review this data. You know, my conversations with the nursing home folks, you know, they are obviously very dependent on state dollars for Medicaid patients that they take care of. And we certainly, you know, no one gets in the business to lose money. You won't be in business very long. But it will help us dramatically to be able to make informed decisions about how best to spend those dollars and those discussions when we have this data. So I just want to reiterate how important it is for us as policymakers, and I want to thank all the folks in the provider community for working with us on this as we look at rates issues and things like that. But this is extraordinarily important. So for what it's worth, just know we're paying attention and look forward to being positioned to have the data so we can make some decisions going forward. All right, we're going to move on. If no more questions, we're going to move on to the Healthcare Transparency website.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right, Healthcare Transparency websites. So now we're going to switch gears, obviously, a little bit and review our agency's transparency websites. The agency's Florida Center for Health Information and Transparency collects, analyzes, and disseminates healthcare-related data and statistics. Data from over 5,000 healthcare facilities is managed to create those data-driven policies and increase transparency. These are our three main websites managed by the agency. Florida Health Finder, which is our most popular website. A lot of you have probably been to Florida Health Finder yourselves. Florida Health Price Finder, and also MyFloridaRx. The Healthcare Transparency landing page, where the landing page serves as that launching point to all of these three websites. This allows us to point traffic to one main page and also allows consumers the ability to see all of our transparency initiatives in one area. So our Florida Health Finder. As I just mentioned, Florida Health Finder is our most visited and most popular website. It provides easy to understand healthcare information and healthcare performance and information and facility quality data as well. The information comes from our agency's licensure database and is updated daily. Consumers can use Florida Health Finder for many things such as searching for a facility. If your families may need a nursing home, an assisted living facility, or home health agency for yourselves or others or a loved one, our Florida Health Finder can, you can go to Florida Health Finder and you can see these facilities in the area and around the state, see the types of services and amenities that they provide and offer. Additionally, consumers can search and compare hospital quality performance measures, infection rates, patient safety ratings to make better informed decisions of where you seek your care. If you do need healthcare data, you can search and export data or submit a request to order things such as hospital discharge data, ambulatory or outpatient data, our emergency department data, hospital finance data, and health plan data as well. Consumers can also view provider profiles to see a map of the facility location, see controlling interest information, bed size, license status, inspection reports, any sanctions that we have, services offered, and any other outstanding legal actions. So that's our Florida Health Finder. So some recent improvements that we made. As I mentioned, I was here in February, and during that committee presentation, as I was going through our then current transparency website progress, members provided feedback, a lot of you provided feedback and asked questions that we categorized into these five areas noted on this slide here. So I'm going to go over these and hopefully be able to answer some of your questions that were raised in February as well. So these are the improvements and updates we worked on since that February presentation. To help with understanding discoverability for our websites, we did improve our search engine optimization for targeting specific keywords and phrases to help drive visitors to our website. We also implemented our first paid advertising campaign to promote all of our transparency websites. Prior to that, the agency was conducting weekly webinars for consumers who registered for them and posting information on social media ourselves. In state fiscal year 2023-2024, funding we received to improve the healthcare transparency websites is being used to do the following. Secure additional data enhancements, so we've been able to do that, such as additional payer and pharmacy information to provide better and more accurate average prices. Redesign the user experience to reduce the number of clicks it takes to get to the healthcare data. We heard that as a negative comment, so hopefully we've increased that. This was prioritized based on previous visits to the most sought-after information. And lastly, improving the navigation experience through our transparency websites. The paid ad campaign has allowed us to increase our ability to measure traffic with monthly utilization reports, paid ad polling and matrix, following up with users to measure experience, value, and to identify additional areas for improvement. To improve our reach, we are driving traffic to our healthcare transparency landing page, as I mentioned earlier. This page allows users to easily navigate to all of our website, all of our transparency websites that I mentioned earlier, from that one location. We're also beginning to benefit from analyzing the results from the paid ad campaign, matrix, and reports, which I will mention later on in the presentation. So I'll give you an update on where we are with the paid campaign ad and some data that we've received from that. Finally, we were also able to focus our efforts on implementing or improving the mobile experience for users and presenting data in a more easy view for mobile users to see and use. So these were some things that were raised in February, so we wanted to roll these into our current presentation today, so that you can see some of the improvements we've made just since February. So on this slide, it's a visual representation. The previous Health Finder look, which is on my left, so that's our previous Florida Health Finder, and then on my right, is the feel and look of the new updated website. The next couple of slides I'm going to be going over with you today will be displaying a video on the computer view and navigation of the website and also our mobile experience as well. So we wanted to take you through these two websites. With the ever-growing number of people using their cell phones to access the internet, we do understand how important it is for providing an easy-to-use and functional mobile phone experience. I will be pointing out as we go through some important sections of the website while the videos play. Sorry about that. That's the mobile one. So as you can see here, for starters, you can see a similar look and feel from our landing page. We have the same navigation buttons at the top to make it easy for consumers to jump to all of our other transparency websites. The previous site had large drop-down menus with a lot of links. So we now have added a mega menu that categorizes links into certain groups, as you see here. Also, the compare quick links allows our users to pull down report results by provider type with just one click. You can search for our providers by clicking the search provider button or using the compare and locate button, and we're going to come back to that. The next section of the homepage presents our most used tools. As you can see here, each card flips over with links to related information. Then the next section you will see is our dashboard section. Is interchangeable and shows the most clicked on databases that we have with just one click. Our adverse incident reporting, our emergency data as well. And as you go down, the final section of this website shows how to navigate the website with a 3-minute video. So we did put a video that helps consumers know about how to access the website and search for things on our website, as well as frequently asked questions and how to contact us. We're going to scroll back up, and as I mentioned, there are multiple ways to search for compare providers on the website. In this example, the compare and locate button is used. Users are prompted to use a drop-down menu to select a provider and search. So we did keep the county in here, and as you can see, how to search this is there. We are selecting a hospital, and so you can see we are selecting in Duval County. You can do the drop-down or the map. Once you submit, you will see your results. So we now have a filtering menu as well that allows you to narrow your search results and filter in alphabetical or numeric order. You have the, and you can export. So there are multiple exports functions that you can do. Advanced search options, there's a lot of additional information in our advanced search option as well that help you really define and narrow your search. So we'll show you how to actually click on and take you to a specific facility's profile page. So we will type this in, Mayo Clinic. We'll click on Mayo Clinic, and as you can see here, a map and address with contact information pulls up, as well as executives, controlling interest, the number of beds, license expiration dates, license numbers as well. Further down on the page, you can see any emergency actions, also addresses, mailing addresses, and street addresses. Sometimes those are different. Our emergency actions, our ACA reports, which are our inspection reports, consumer guides as well. And then at the bottom is the services and characteristics, and you can also compare hospitals. So you can see Mayo is a Class 1 hospital, their emergency services that they offer, organ transplant programs, special designation as a teaching hospital. And at the bottom, you can print the hospital quality measures and patient information as well. So that's a very quick overview of our new website that actually we just launched on November the 9th. So just a week ago today, we just pushed this website out. We pushed it out earlier in the year to do a little test drive and to get any feedback. We were able to get some feedback from that, and we did make some changes to that. The next slide I'm going to show you is the mobile, looking at doing the mobile experience. So here we go. It's the same look and feel that we just saw from the website that of Florida Health Finder. You can see the site is hopefully responsive and easy to navigate. We do know more folks, that younger folks specifically, use their mobile devices. And as you'll see, these are the most visited tools, the flip cards that we saw on our website earlier. It goes through our specific dashboards. And one thing that you can do is, you know, zoom in and pull specific data reports up that you're looking at, just like you may do now on your mobile phones. So you're able to do this with our agency dashboards information as well. Again, how to use Florida Health Finder. There's a video along with frequently asked questions, as well as how to contact us and submit questions that way. We'll also take you through the same thing I mentioned earlier about how to search for a provider. So you can do this. You don't have to be at your computer. You can do this from your mobile device, search for the same provider. So we're going to pull the hospitals up in Duval County, and we're going to specifically search for Mayo Clinic so that you can see the comparison that we just saw on the computer, on the larger screen. So it shows you the same information from a facility profile standpoint. Our address, the addresses, key staff, controlling interest, license number, number of beds, emergency actions, our inspection reports, consumer guides, also our comparative pricing services that were offered that I just mentioned earlier. And then does take you down to the bottom where you can print the hospital quality metrics. So hopefully that shows you some of the improvements that we have made on both of these websites, the website and also from a mobile standpoint. As you know, our smartphones probably are a little smarter than us some days, but the smartphone everybody uses their mobile device to search for certain information. So we hope that these enhancements have been very helpful. One of the things, too, is that our survey teams use the mobile Florida Health Finder a lot as well if they're looking up a provider that they need to go to and click on for their address and be able to get directions to their facility. So we talked about Florida Health Finder. As again, that's our most popular, most visited website that we have, both internally and externally. So staff at the agency use Florida Health Finder a lot, as we do get a lot of traffic on Florida Health Finder externally. So our Florida Health Price Finder. So this website provides consumer-focused cost data on common services called care bundles. The average prices listed come from millions of all payer claims data. All payer claims data includes Aetna, AvMed, Capital Health Plan, Florida Blue, Health First, Humana, and United Healthcare, representing approximately 11 million annual members. The figures for this report were derived from over 147 million claims, including over 15.7 million institutional claims and 131.3 million professional claims. The claims in this data focuses on employer-sponsored group and individual market plans. The data is adjusted for inflation and refreshed annually. The data is made up of over 227 million pharmacy claims, 147 million medical claims, nearly 3 million Medicare Advantage members, 11 million annual members with commercial insurance, health plan data for 7 payers, and over 6 million group and individual market members. So this data right now is based on service dates from 2021 to 2022 calendar years. Currently, we are working on updating 2021 to 2022 data, and additional data types such as denied claims, Medicare and Medicaid claims, that would require additional statutory changes. Consumers can use this website to search and compare prices for nearly 300 common services. Prices are listed as national, state, and county averages. You can see how the procedures are broken down by average cost and learn about what to expect, questions to ask your physician, and how to prepare for that procedure. For future planning, we are currently working on adding an additional 100 common services, which would bring the total up to 400. This could be as soon as mid-2024. So I'm going to take you through a little bit of our Florida Health Price Finder website. The homepage is in keeping with the agency's similar branding tools and the feel. Searches can be initiated by typing in keywords, browsing bundles by name, or finding a care bundle by county. So how it works. Further down the page is an interactive map, as you can see, with instructions on how to use it. A visitor can hover over a county to see the total care bundles in that county and per member, per month average cost of health care in that county. This is a new data enhancement that was added this year. The drop-down menu does allow a user to select their county, and then they can select a bundle name, such as a knee replacement. We do know that the knee replacement is one of the most commonly searched care bundles. The results show the median price of the searched bundle service, a description of what a bundle service is, and range in price as well. So as we continue with how it works, as I mentioned, knee replacement is one of the most commonly searched. So if you click to see more information, you will be taken to the care bundle overview, which this is the care bundle overview. In this slide, you can see a knee replacement was selected and the results for Broward County. The cost overview shows the estimated costs reported from millions of claims based on the actual amounts paid by health insurers to healthcare providers. This does include the portion paid by the insurer as well as any patient deductible, coinsurance, and copayments as well. From here, from this page, you can see the national, state, and county average. Again, Broward County is what we selected. You can also view the average prices at the hospital in that selected county. So down below the cost overview of national, state, and county, you can see some of the hospitals in that area. You can see all the steps associated with this procedure and use the other tabs, what's next, and other related care bundles tabs to view suggested questions, again, to ask your provider and see tips on how to prepare for positive outcomes from your surgery. So that's our second Florida Health Price Finder transparency website. Our last website and our most newest website is MyFloridaRx, which we'll cover now. This website, as many of you may know, was previously managed by the Attorney General's Office. The agency took over managing and updating this website starting in January of this year, based on specific appropriations 229 in 2022-2023. In addition, in creating an interactive map tool, we increased the total drugs listed from 150 to 300. MyFloridaRx provides the retail pharmacy prices for the 300 most dispensed drugs. This data is updated monthly, and it distinguishes if a drug is generic or brand named. The goal is to shine some light on the price consumers pay for the over 300 most dispensed drugs across different pharmacies in their counties. Consumers can use this website to see the average prices at pharmacies in their county. Our goal is to continue to add new pharmacies and expand the drug prices that we do list. As you can see, this actually is the landing page for MyFloridaRx. Again, we have the same look and feel as our other transparency websites, as I showed you early in the presentation. So this does add to the brand recognition we're building with our transparency websites. So how does MyFloridaRx work? As a consumer, you can select your county by using the drop-down menu, or you can hover or scroll to the county name on the map. Once you choose your county, you can then use the drop-down menu to search for a prescription drug. And here you see we have pulled up some results. So after you click your search, results will pop up as they have here, listing the pharmacies in that county, as well as their price for the search prescription drug. The results can be filtered by price. You could do that under the price section, so you could go from most expensive to least expensive, or vice versa. You can filter it by price and by city as well. And a consumer can export the file into Excel, or you can actually print it. Our research does show that a few of the most commonly searched prescription drugs do include amoxicillin, obviously an antibiotic, ibuprofen at the 800 milligrams and higher dosage, and vitamin D2. So those are some of the most commonly researched medications. So future enhancements and features. Took it to heart when we were here in February, so hopefully we've updated some of our websites based on the feedback we received in February to now. But these are some additional things that we are working on for future enhancements and features to all of our websites. We are working on increasing data availability to all of our websites, including adding more payer data and retail pharmacies. Florida Health Finder provides a list of consumer instructions and forms. So what we're planning to do there is turning these written instructions into animated infographics to visually show consumers how to perform specific tasks. In the current fiscal year, we're working towards incorporating a virtual assistant on Florida Health Finder that uses artificial intelligence to assist consumers in finding information that they do ask for, that they're looking to seek. This will also help in learning more about what information consumers seek out the most. The paid ad campaign has provided us with the opportunity to better engage with consumers. So we plan to begin identifying ways that we can measure value and cost savings. We're also looking at how to drill further into use cases that can improve healthcare and quality. And that's, Dr. Koga will speak more about this shortly. And some examples can include mental health awareness. So full campaign creative assets have been deployed and are running right now promoting mental health information on our transparency websites. Another example could be early pregnancy detection. We can push out targeted ads with information to specific groups and encourage them to remain engaged with us as they go through their pregnancies. Additionally, we could also expand this to include additional targeted health and healthcare initiatives such as diabetes education. All of you may know, November is Diabetes National Awareness Month. So as part of our website surveys, we are expanding the pop-up survey questions to include certain questions to gather additional information like, what type of information are you searching for? Where did you hear about this website? Did you find the information you were looking for? And how helpful was the website? So these are some pop-up questions now that are on our website that we're including and gathering information for. These answers will help us learn more about our visitor experience and identify ways for improvement. So those are some of our future enhancements and features as we move through with continued enhancements to our transparency websites. So the marketing campaign. So with the $3 million that were appropriated to us last year for marketing, we were able to run paid ad campaigns from May 15th to September the 30th of this year. This slide shows you some of the marketing campaign metrics. On the left, my left, you will see the ad impressions and clicks on the various platforms. Impressions, many of you may know this, but impressions are defined as the number of times your content is displayed, regardless of whether it was clicked on or not. Clicks are defined as the number of times the ad was clicked. On the right, my right again, you will see the website visitors to the healthcare transparency landing page since we started the paid ad campaign. In June, when the ads were running, you can see the spike in visitors to our landing page compared to May prior to the start of the ad campaigns. Although we did see that dip, we see that drop in July, the visitors were still 7 times more prior to the ad campaign starting. In August, we almost tripled again, and then in September, when the ad started running, you can see the spike over 163,000 visitors for that month. On November the 9th, as I mentioned, November the 9th, we pushed out our updated website. We pushed out the updated Florida Help Finder updates. And our November numbers to date by major platforms do include, now again, just updated our website, Google Analytics, over 11,985 new users to the website from November the 9th to the 13th, with an average time on the site for just over 1 minute. Facebook, 58,453 impressions and over 1,836 clicks. YouTube, 212,000 impressions and almost 3,000 clicks. Google search, almost 77,000 impressions and over 15,000 clicks. Additionally, for our marketing campaign, we looked at marketing in working on the marketing and getting the metrics. The marketing campaign platforms that we use, and some you'll see here, YouTube. Obviously, we use YouTube. We know that people go there for research on personal experiences. People, as we know, prefer to watch a video. How many of us go to YouTube to find out how to change the oil in our car, how to change a light bulb, how to put something together? A lot of people like to see videos. Meta, so we use Meta. It's created for targeting specific audience. You can do that with advertisements. So we can also run long videos on Meta as well, which does include, all of you know, Facebook and Instagram. Google, everybody does a Google search. So we do see 1 in 3 clicks on our ads, so a 32% click-through rate on knee replacements alone. I told you knee replacements are the most commonly searched bundle, so knee replacements alone. Creative ads, we include content created to be shared on social media posts, LinkedIn, Facebook, etc. Audio spots. One thing that we did was podcast commercial spots. How many of you listen to podcasts? What's interesting, a personal note, I was actually out and about walking one day during when we were doing our ad campaigns. Obviously, I knew we were doing these marketing campaigns. I had headphones in, listening to a podcast. Nothing to do with healthcare was that podcast I was listening to. But as I'm walking along for an advertisement, I heard our Florida Health Funder ads pop up. I thought, wow, listen to that, right? Embedded into a podcast. So these are some marketing tools that we used. Amazon, how many of us shop on Amazon? And how many of us are shopping right now on Amazon? How many of us sit in meetings and shop on Amazon? So a good signal of medical needs is what people are putting in their basket on Amazon, whether it's diapers, baby registries, medical supplies, knee braces, canes, wheelchairs, walkers. So we use these tools and these platforms as part of our marketing campaign. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Kogel to close us out with our transparency websites. And he will provide some clinical points to share regarding how healthcare transparency supports decision-making, therefore improves consumer healthcare quality. Dr. Kogel.
Thank you, Doctor. You're recognized.
Chair Garrison, the committee, thank you for allowing us to talk today. So I'm speaking as the physician executive at the agency, but also as a medical oncologist, a practicing oncologist. My specialty is in blood cancers and blood marrow transplant. And so what I'm going to highlight today are several positive impacts of price transparency from those two perspectives. First up is that the practice of medicine here in Florida has changed greatly because of these price transparency tools, in part. I remember in the 90s, the occasional patient would have a yahoo.com printout or screenshot, but now my patients, when they sit before me, have actual printouts of the peer-reviewed literature for the treatments that they're getting. They'll have a price transparency printout of how much their drugs cost. They'll have the star ratings of me and the institution, and then also people across the town as well. And what they'll be asking is this accurate? Is this apply to me? It's changed us so much that I actually have now a financial rep, or we call them fin reps inside the clinic. A fin rep is a required stop for my patients to talk about how the price of their treatment fits with their specific indication. And I think that's what's a distinction from what the agency is providing on health on the Price Finder website compared to the local clinical implementation. So the agency provides this estimate of or this costs that are extracted from these major providers. And in the clinic, we look at them when we're presented a price, we look at them as an estimate for what that cost is. It is the fin rep that sits down with the patient, looks at what the plan is for that patient, looks at their health insurance coverage, co-pays, et cetera, and then fine-tunes that price to the patient to give them a more accurate number on how much it costs. I should also mention that this information is also presented to the patient as they're sitting usually below a list of prices that our hospitals are now required to showcase as a menu options of what's available. So our patients have these prices on a board behind them in the waiting room, and they have no reference for that. So the Price Finder website gives them a chance to look at a reference of what is the average cost respective to the board behind them. This all also goes to informed decision-making, which is the second positive impact. So a pillar of the shared decision-making is that the patient has autonomy. They have the agency to be able to say, I want this or I don't. And one of the important feeds or inputs into that is how much is this going to cost me? Now, most of the focus I think today, as we've been thinking about this, Price Finder website is with the individual in mind. But there's an informed decision-making, from, especially with my patients that have cancer, that are undergoing life-threatening chemotherapy, there's caregivers and family units, and there's patient support groups that are around this patient that are also ingesting information and also giving information back to the patient. So there's this communal aspect that the Price Finder website provides. I've given lots of talks for Leukemia Lymphoma Society, American Cancer Society, patient foundations throughout the state of Florida. And after I give the talk on the bright emerging therapies that are available for patients is usually a financial toxicity talk that is given by a case manager or a FinRep. And what they pull down is information about how much is the cost of care for this disease, whether it be for cancer is usually the patient groups that I usually present to. And so these reps and these case managers are able to talk with a patient group about how much it costs. And interestingly, it's when patients talk to each other during the support group and say, hey, I paid this much for this care, or they share how much they pay, and it was worth it, or it wasn't worth it. And so they can share not just cost information, but they interweave in quality information. And that is delivered in these kinds of meetings for informed decision-making. The third positive impact is financial planning. And reduction of surprise bills. So it's helpful to know. Kim Smoke presented the knee replacements. It's helpful to know it costs $20,000 on average because it helps you in your financial planning. So you can go and look and see what your insurance coverage is. Do you have the right kind of insurance for this? And it also lets you know that after your knee replacement, if you're only getting bills for $2,000, there's going to be more bills coming. And so you won't be surprised when those additional bills come in. But if those bills get over $20,000, over $30,000, then those are red flags. And what the agency's data shows is if the estimate average, based on their data, is $20,000, if I'm paying way more than that, that makes the patient and the family price alert, and it allows them to have deeper investigation. Now, the fourth element is preventive care. And no one has studied this. There's actually very few studies of price transparency on consumer behavior. There are some. None have looked at preventative care, but we see it in clinical practice. Now, if you know that your knee replacement is going to cost $20,000, you might want to do some physical therapy. You might want to do some lower cost injections. So you're more likely to talk to your doc about what else can I do besides actually going through the surgery. And so there's a preventive care aspect, and this is for not just knee replacements, but it's for stent procedures. If you look at the website, getting a cardiac coronary artery stent, $40,000. And so that information can help a patient and their family decide that maybe we should look at that smoking that you're doing. Maybe we should try to maximize nicotine replacement therapy or other preventive measures. The fifth element is patient trust and patient satisfaction. So as an oncologist sitting down to write chemotherapy with my patients, the center of gravity has now shifted in between the patient and me because of price transparency. So when the patient knows more, that center of gravity comes towards the patient closer, their shared decision making, and trust builds. I welcome any time a patient comes with a cost. Even though the cost is not what my facility is going to charge, it's at least a point, it's an estimate at which we can talk about something. Because I'm looking for ways to bond with this patient because I need to know their value system, what their goals are, and if I have something like cost that I can talk to about, that's great. It gives me something to hold on to bring us closer together. But trust goes different ways. It's interesting. Of the few studies that are out there, when a patient is price aware, about 6% of them will actually change their doctor just by knowing what the price is for seeing that doctor in that facility. So there is an alteration in who people see when they become price aware. The other thing about about being price aware is that the data show that patients are more likely to stay in state, especially when you're abutting against states that don't have price information. And so there's a in-state healthcare Florida provider impact that having these prices out there that as a provider, I would say is a positive impact. And there's also data that show that when price information is presented to patients, even if it doesn't impact their choice to go to that pharmacy or to that facility, their satisfaction of their care goes up just by having more information. And so to me, that just it just shows how people are savvy in shopping, not just for non-medical, but for medical. And then the sixth and last point that I'll bring up is the positive impact of competition among healthcare providers. You can bet that facilities and pharmacies that are on this website are looking at what their prices are. And what that is doing, I'll tell you, is it is causing internal appraisal for why the costs are that way. And there's actually data on this that show that when a healthcare provider or facility has their prices shown, the two services that actually reduce in price are laboratory, and the other one is imaging. Interestingly, the office visits don't change much in their price, but laboratory and imaging costs they do go down when there is price transparency, just by having numbers up. And so there is a competition among the providers just by having this. And I think that is our last slide. It's our last slide. So thank you very much, Chair.
Great. Well, if you don't mind, hang tight, Doctor, and Ms. Smoke as well. No members have questions. We're going to start with Rep. Salzman, then go to Rep. Abbott. Rep. Salzman, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the presentation. First of all, fantastic job. I mean, this is a direct example of when the legislature communicates with the agencies, how well we can work together. I think you did phenomenally. I mean, I don't have many critiques. The only feedback I want to give you is I hope you recognize the conversion rate was not even 0.5% with Meta versus Google at 70%. Mm-hmm. So I hope that you're changing your strategies as you notice the conversion rates, because you put a lot of money into Meta and you didn't get much back. And that's typically that way in the world of advertising online. But, I mean, fantastic. I can't even articulate it. I'm just so excited to see all the things that you did. Everything we said last year in this committee, you guys went back and said, we can do that, and you did it. And now our people, our constituents of Florida, are getting access to information so they can make better healthcare choices. So thank you very much for that. I would like to just mention when we talk about price transparency, that creates a little bit of an issue in my opinion. I think we should obviously be transparent in pricing, but we also have the conversation of coverage. What it costs versus coverage are two different things. And when you're talking about just regular visits to the general physician, and it's no big deal, that I could see where that would be helpful. But when you talk about surgeries, and you talk about other big things, and you put that number in front of them, they get shocked when they get the bill back because they don't know why this, that, or the other is there, because the insurance companies don't have that requirement of price transparency. They give you an estimate of coverage, and then you get the services, and then all of a sudden you're getting bills from several different facilities, different doctors. So it's great when we talk about preventative care, but when we get into the actual treatment of people and the surgeries where we provide services from various doctors, anesthesiologists, just all the follow-up care and the hospital stay, all that, it's hard to put those together. So I think it's great with this concept. Obviously, it's very successful. It helps us understand that it's not that much money to go to the doctor and just get a checkup. But I just want to reiterate, it's a slippery slope when we talk about making the physicians be transparent and, you know, some of our services that we say online, but we're not holding the insurance companies to the fire and making sure that they're transparent in what they're going to cover. That includes the issue of clawbacks, and the list goes on. So no questions, just comments of great job. And then since we're talking about transparency, just putting out there my two cents. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Rep. Representative Abbott, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for updating this website. It is much easier to use, and it has a tremendous amount of information on it. I have a question, and then if I could have one follow-up, please.
Absolutely.
What
you need?
As the agency, do we do any secret shopping?
No, we do not.
Okay. I do. And, of course, I may take a unique perspective because I am a pharmacy, and, my pharmacy is listed on some of these. And when I did some of this shopping, the prices we have are not even close. They are so astronomically off, it's a little alarming. And, Doctor, you had mentioned impact choice. And that's part of, there's two ways to look at this. If I'm the provider, having incorrect data or incorrect information that might steer patients to a different provider would upset me. Also, as a consumer, if the price is significantly different than what the site is showing, that would upset me. I'll give you a couple examples. If you look right now in Leon County, where we're at, it says only, you had mentioned amoxicillin as being one of the most popular drugs. It says there's only two pharmacies in Leon County that have amoxicillin right now. One Walmart and one CVS. If I'm Publix, I'm a little upset that I'm not on that list and my price isn't being shown. If I'm an independent pharmacy, I'm a little bit upset that my price is not on that and not being shown. And if I'm on Walgreens, I'm upset. So I also wanted to make sure I go to the other side of the thing and on the healthcare bundles. So I called a couple facilities after looking up what it would cost to get a regular screening colonoscopy, since that'll be coming up sometime soon in my life. Yep, I am. And that was the one that really shocked me. So one of the facilities, the highest facility, according to our website, said about $4,300. When I called and said I'm self-pay and I don't have insurance, it was about $800. I looked at the cheapest one, which said it was about $1,800, and I did the same thing, and it came back at $1,140. So I would have steered somebody using the website to the surgery center that was actually higher than what we're saying is the most expensive piece. I would almost rather give people no information than give them the wrong information, because it's really difficult to make good healthcare decisions if I'm going to be financially responsible as a consumer than to make decisions based on something that may be that incorrect. And I perceive that some of it may be in, I know we were capturing millions of claims, but you mentioned something that I really triggered onto that I like, and I think we as a committee might ought to look at, and you said it would take a statutory change to add more payers to this. I think we're lacking too many, or we're missing too many payers, and it's very important because your payer base dictates a lot of the rate setting for hospitals. If I'm a hospital in a large Medicaid population, that's a different rate that I'm probably going to receive than if I'm a hospital near a base and I have a large TRICARE population. I really am struggling with some of the numbers that are showing up on here as a provider, and if I'm a consumer, I'm struggling with those. So I would like to see us figure out how do we get these things accurate. I am with Representative Salzman also. It's important to get insurance transparency in this, and I think adding more payers to our list would probably help, and so maybe we should look at that statutory change and add more payers at minimal the Medicaid plans.
Thank you, Rep. I think it was more of a statement than a question, but it was very informative. But anything you want to do?
Thank you, Representative Abbott, for that. My team is listening, and I'm sure writing down all of this, and honestly, I think this is what this is about, for us to continue in the road of making everything more transparent with our website. So appreciate the feedback, and we definitely will go back to the team and see what we can do. Thank you.
Rep. Bartleman.
Thank you, Chair. I first want to start out, and mine's kind of a comment as well, but a question for the future. First of all, this is night and day, especially the mobile piece, which I was adamant about, and because most people just use their phones like me. I did everything. I didn't price check, but I did see I could get to my drugs and the near. I did all of that.
But the one thing that I use most in my district is nursing homes. So when I went to Nursing Home Finder, it doesn't it's not the same setup as the other links. It actually requires you to download an Excel spreadsheet. It's difficult to use on your phone. You have to go down to a setting, and we were sitting here, and it took us like 3 times to figure out even how to get the Excel spreadsheet, and then only 3 showed up, and then I didn't even know that you could scroll to get more. But to me, we have a lot of senior citizens here in Florida, and having the searchability and all of that on that specific area is really important to them. Also, this is like a pie in the sky, but if you say you update your data daily, so open beds, because that's one of the biggest things. I have families calling around going, who has a bed? And then what if all the gold seals are filled? Do you give them a second tier of places to go? Because that's the other problem in my district. When everything's full, where do they go? And it may be a disclaimer that if you're a vet, you're entitled to a vet nursing home, because I've had vets call me looking for nursing homes, and they don't think sometimes to go, wait, you qualify to go to a veterans nursing home. So if you could enhance that a little more, or their plans, because you did a lot in a short period of time, but we represent a lot of senior citizens, and that's like the number one call I get is they can't find a place to go. So I'll leave it that question to you.
You recognize.
Sure, thank you. Thank you, Representative Bartleman. you do a lot of great work educating your constituents. I say you can refer them to us. We'll help, too, with that, by the way, to give you a little bit of break. But those are some great points about the mobile app. I will tell you, as soon as the mobile app came out, as you know, I started looking at myself, because I spend a lot of time going through it, too, and I sit in meetings and look things up as I'm asked in various national conferences I attend. So your points are well taken. We will definitely take those back as well. I do hear the directive, it seems like, about bed availability. I understand that and get that. That is something we would have to go back and figure out how to get that. That might take statutory change, too, for us to get that and a way to get that, because that would have to be reported to us. When we talk about our licensure information being updated daily, when we make things in our licensure database, so our licensure database that's internal to us, which is VRSA regulation. So if we make an update, so if we renew a license that is expiring today, so we issue the license, tomorrow you will see the new expiration date. If there's a bed change, if they're adding additional beds, you would see that. So that's what I meant by the updating that. But I understand the bed availability. Again, that may take a lot of work. And those conversations should definitely be happening locally, too, between hospitals, nursing homes, assisted living facilities, and other healthcare entities.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And if the bed availability is too pie in the sky, Can you at least let it create that specific one to interface like the other ones, so you don't have to go through a Microsoft Excel on your phone to try to figure it out? I'll show you later, but you actually have to download the Excel, and it doesn't have the search features the same as the other applications you have on your site for the mobile phone. So thank you.
In full transparency, my surveyors actually provided feedback this week on the mobile app as well. Those were some of the things that they shared. So those are some of the things that my team, again, is listening, and they're taking note of all these. So hopefully next time I come back, we'll have an update at a more transparent website on that. All right. Thank you.
Any other questions? I've got some. So just to make sure I understand this correctly, so the legislation, am I correct in saying the legislation requires state group contracts and managed care contracts to be the basis for the data for the website? Is that correct?
I believe so. I can double check, but I believe so.
Okay. Do we have any commercial plans or any sort of that data that's contributing to this data set at all, or is it just state group and Medicaid?
AdMed, Florida Blue,
okay.
Capital Health Plan. I'm trying to find my page for that. Right.
Are we, while you're doing that, I mean, I want to make sure, are all the folks who are required to submit data submitting it?
I will definitely have to check that to be sure. But definitely
question I had. And then one more question specifically on the nuts and bolts of this. I got a wild hair and asked Brian to pull the contract with HGCI who administers the site. And there is a deliverable on that contract that says that the vendor shall provide extensive polling and reporting on utilization of the website, traffic volume by page, user, returning user, as well as showing us geographically where the people who are accessing the site, you know, where are they? Where are they doing it from? I'm curious as to that information, because if the site's being accessed by a bunch of lobbyists and healthcare execs in Tallahassee because they want to, you know, spy on their competitors, that's one thing. If it's being accessed, you know, by somebody trying to get a hip replacement in Pensacola, that's something else. And so if you have any information on that, I'd be curious to know what the data shows.
Okay. To answer your first question, for the all-payer claims database, that does include Aetna, AVMED, Capital Health Plan, Florida Blue, Health First, Humana, and United Healthcare. So it does represent about 11 million annual members.
Okay.
So
as to the second question, I mean, do we know who's accessing this site?
That is something that we could get. I think we do have that through our contract, and we have talked about that this week. You know, as far as the data metrics, I mean, I did share the data metrics that we've since our advertising campaign, but who and where, we can get that information for you.
Well, I just want to make sure that if our vendor is required to give us that information, I want to make sure we get that information.
Sure.
I would personally be really interested to know, obviously, you don't know the names of the people who are accessing this information, but like I said, that's important to me, and to know, you know, what the volume of the page is, what, you know, all that sort of information is important. Unique user counts, things like that. As it relates to, this is more like a big picture question, more for Dr. Kogel, I guess, is, in preparation for this hearing, I spent a lot of time on the road, and I went back, had my legislative assistant go back and pull the committee presentations, the floor debates from back in 2016. Young Speaker Sprouls and Senator Bradley, you know, the first, and made their presentations. And a lot of the emphasis was on that this would be a tool for consumers to use, become educated consumers in their healthcare. My anecdotal experience sitting here 7 years later is that I don't know that we're hitting that mark, just both in terms of just looking at the website traffic. In April, 1,265 visitors. It's gone up. And so that's a long runway for the question I have, which is, It's my belief that data that doesn't drive decision-making is just busy work. It takes a lot of work to put this information together. Costs a lot of taxpayer dollars. The opinion question I'm asking you is, number one, are we getting this in the hands of consumers in a way that's actually putting them in a position to drive decision-making on the healthcare they're receiving? And if we're not, to the extent at least we want to, are there other uses for this information from either a clinical perspective or from a policymaking perspective that could be beneficial? Because I personally want to know what things cost, not some made-up number on a charge master document somewhere. I mean, I want to know what things cost. I think it's helpful for us to have that information. But how can we utilize that in a way as policymakers that can help us actually, you know, make the system better? It's a long question. Feel free to answer it however you see fit.
Great, thanks, Mr. Garrison. I'll answer it in three ways. First is my experience as a Florida physician is that patients do bring inside my private clinic room with them information about their price. I don't always know where they get it from. But we definitely talk about cost to the point that I require my patients before they leave my clinic to stop off and have a closed door session with our financial rep where they go over cost of care. And I don't know everywhere they get their information from. Some patients bring printouts ready to go. A lot of them don't, and we help them in their financial literacy. The second answer is, the transition is that the plural of anecdotes is not data. So I can't say that these opinions and these experiences are the data that you might want to have. I will tell you, and my second part of the answer is that other states that have enacted and implemented a price transparency tool have done research to look at the impact of some follow-on research to look at that impact of has their specific tool led to certain changes in consumer behavior or healthcare pricing. But that's been a very purposeful that's an effort that other states have taken. We don't have that here, but that might be where you want to go. The third thing that I would say is that putting this all together, just having the information to these patients engages them in healthcare. The application beyond consumer empowerment is looking at this at a state policy angle and looking at, for example, outliers. And why is one facility have an outlier cost? And then that opens the doorway to looking at quality. Really what we're getting at is value. That's what the patient wants. That's what the payer wants. That's what the provider wants. So, and that equation is quality over cost. So the meta use, not the Facebook meta, but the meta analysis use of this data that we could leverage is looking at that value proposition to the state and to the healthcare enterprise in general.
If I gave you a magic wand as our chief medical officer and said, we can do this as it relates specifically to the price issue here, Price Finder. We could just wave a magic wand and make it happen. What would you like to see us be doing differently in this respect? Or what can we do to make this a better product from your position, your thoughts? Again, understanding in reality, it takes a long time for that stuff to happen, but as policymakers, what can we take from your expertise and see where we can improve things?
Right. Thanks, Chair. First of all, I would say that the work that Deputy Secretary Smoke and her team have done is fantastic. It leads the nation, if not the world, in information on price for consumers and healthcare providers. So it already is way ahead of the pack. And so to ask what a wand would do to further being ahead of the pack, I think that the two issues would be, one is to marry quality in with the priced equation. Again, what we're getting at is value. And so if we could look at the quality of care, in close proximity to the cost of care, that's going to enable us to see value, I mean, at the patient level, but also at the policymaker level as well. And so a closer marriage with quality. And I think where you were going and saying, what is the actual impact on consumer behavior, on provider behavior, on payer behavior, those three elements of our healthcare system, looking at the impact of that, because if we know what the impact is, for example, of the little research that's out there, we know that lab costs and imaging costs go down. Why? And if so, is there some secret to that that can be ported over to other high cost aspects to healthcare? So I think that we have a lot to learn. So that second thing I would ask for would be like an impact study, looking at a little deeper. Which is not on deliverables now, but if I had a wand, that's where I'd go.
That's very helpful. Thank you. Any other questions from members of the committee? Yes, Rep. Arlen.
Well, thank you, Chair. When you said it's supposed to be consumer-driven, it made me kind of look at the website differently, and this may not be part of it. But every committee I'm on regarding healthcare is all about not having providers or places to go to get care, right? So when I was looking at the nursing homes, that would help me as a consumer find, but there are rehabilitation centers. Is it even allowed in the rulemaking? Because if it's really about the consumer, they don't want to just know the price, but they're frustrated because they can't find the service. Is there any way to, like, build that in as well? Is that appropriate here under the law? Because they need that as well. Not just the prices, but where's the bed? Where's the mental health bed? Where, like, I hear people that they can't get OBGYN care and all of these things. So I guess you could look for the finder, but is there anything else we can do to enhance that experience for the consumer?
You recognize.
Sure. So, you know, one of the things I showed when we went through the website and the mobile is when you scroll through a specific provider, you can see their specific services and amenities that they do offer. Like Mayo Clinic is a statutory teaching hospital. They're not Baker Act, but they do have transplant programs. So those are things. Hospitals have different services that they offer versus nursing homes. So you can look at the specific nursing homes and see that they provide, you know, maybe rehab, PTO, TST type things, in addition to maybe providing respite care. And then there are certain characteristics in our services, assisted living facilities also when you search. So those items are already built into Florida Health Finder as well. But thank you.
We're running on time, so I'm gonna say sorry, Representative Barlman. We're out of time. Thank you both for your presentation, and thank your colleagues at the agency. As you can tell, this is the issue of price transparency, and the cost of healthcare is a big deal to me and many members of this committee. My hope is that subsequent iterations of this committee as we go forward will periodically check back on this. I know the agency has requested additional funds to increase the optimization of the website as well as advertising to get in the hands of more and more people. And, you know, as the appropriators, I think my question that we need to be asking is, you know, in addition to providing information to consumers, are we in a position to where ultimately we can make some policy decisions based on what the data tells us? And thus far, I don't think we've been in the position to do that yet. So my hope is that we'll kind of have that discussion as we go through the budget process. But thank you for your hard work. Doctor, thank you for your time. I know it's valuable. Thank you all for your engagement on this issue. And with that, members, seeing no further business before the committee, Rep. Abbott moves. We adjourn.